following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Welcome to the February 2023 edition of Normal's Legal Radio and No Borders Media. We're part of the CKUT Communities Collective's Off the Hour at 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the web. We're grassroots community radio on the island of Montreal. On today's show, we examine the trial and verdict of neo-Nazi Charles Soyer Chaput, known by the pseudonym Zeiger. Zeiger was one of the most prolific and important neo-Nazi propagandists in North America, a key contributor to vile online sources of hate like the Iron March and Daily Stormer. Due to the steadfast work of anti-fascists, Zeiger was exposed as Gabriel Soyer Chaput, living in Montreal in 2018. He was eventually charged with inciting hatred towards an identifiable group, arrested in 2020, and eventually put on trial. No Borders Media attended that trial that ended this past January from start to finish. Today we analyze the Zeiger trial, verdict, and the broader struggle against hate with the important help of online hate researcher Etienne Quintal. Let's go to that interview with Etienne by myself, Jaggi Singh, of No Borders Media, right now. I'm speaking with Etienne Quintal. Etienne is an online hate researcher who's done a lot of work, and provided a lot of great insights into the nature of hate, the symbols of hate, involved with several different groups and research efforts. Etienne is here to chat about the Zeiger verdict and also broader implications and broader dynamics of confronting the far right and extremism. Etienne, welcome to No Borders Media.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Etienne, maybe before we get into talking about the topic at hand, you could just maybe say a bit about yourself and the work that you do and how you got into it.
Sure. Yeah. I'm an online hate researcher, as was just said, but I've been interested in the rise of far right movements for a number of years, like going back to when I was a teenager, where, you know, like a lot of teenagers, I was chronically online growing up, and unfortunately, right about the same time, there's a movement that was very much targeting chronically online men, especially. Called the alt-right, and so I was involved in a number of online communities, and unfortunately a lot of them took a turn for the worst, and through that I witnessed some of my friends, even, or some of my online friends, radicalizing. And since then I've been kind of fascinated with how the process of radicalization kind of plays out, but not only that as well, what are the factors that can hinder one's a person's propensity for radicalization, and how can we kind of fight a cultural war almost to make sure that process is stopped in its tracks. So since then, I got involved in a number of efforts. I've been for a very long time interested in specifically the youth aspects of hate movements. So not only how hate movements target young people for, just with their rhetoric, and oftentimes target, queer youth and that kind of stuff, but also how young people are the target of radicalization messages online. I wrote a thesis when I did my master's on white nationalist propaganda on TikTok, looking at new platforms that are mostly used by young people and kind of how those are being used or weaponized in a way to promote radicalization towards white nationalism, but any range of far-right ideologies. And that kind of brings me here, where I've been working for the last, I want to say a few months, but almost 2 years now, on building hatepedia.ca, which is a platform that hosts educational resources on online hate, including a guide to online hate, which contains a bunch of entries, key terms, themes, and symbols and slogans that are commonly found in online hate displays, so that we can work with teachers and students to kind of bridge the cultural gap between both, and make sure that everyone's aware that, our social media spaces are unfortunately being co-opted by people with nefarious intentions.
Awesome. I encourage listeners to check out your Twitter feed. It's full of good information, not just the retweets, but, you know, your own insights and research. It's go onto Twitter and find Etienne Quintal, or if you want to know, it's at Quintal underscore Etienne. And you mentioned Hatepedia, so I'll plug that as well again. It's hatepedia.ca, one of many great online efforts that you've been part of. So Etienne, one of the pretexts for this interview is the recent verdict against Zeiger, whose actual name is Charles Soyer Chaput. And so that listeners know, they would know if they were following the No Borders Media Twitter feed. I, Jaggy Singh, as a journalist, was able to cover the trial. I covered every second of it, except for roughly 1 minute where I had to walk out. Otherwise, I was just too upset. I felt like punching Zeiger. It was when he denied knowing what 1488 meant. And I'll get into that in a second, because it's sort of a reflection of the botched case that was presented. And even though there was a guilty verdict, you know, it was never guaranteed. Not that these things are guaranteed. Before I start asking you questions about the trial and about your feelings about the verdict and the significance of it, I just want to stress to listeners that regardless of what the verdict would have been, and it ends up being a guilty verdict, there'll be sentencing, there might be an appeal, so, you know, things could change up. For anti-fascists and people who are paying attention to this, you know, sort of the real gain here, I don't want to talk in terms of a victory, but the sort of gain was the very fact that Zeiger was exposed because of the steadfast work of anti-fascist researchers and activists back in 2017 and 2018. So Zeiger was exposed in 2018. That destroyed his anonymity, which he relied on. And as you'll probably talk about later, Etienne, so much of this hate online relies on people being anonymous and beyond any sort of accountability. So his exposure basically neutralized him over these years. You know, we talk about Zeiger, Charles Soyer Chaput, and, you know, he's not just your average neo-Nazi. He was one of the key members in North America of a neo-Nazi ecosystem, the second most prolific contributor to a website called the Daily Stormer, which is probably one of the most accessed neo-Nazi websites in the world. And involve a lot of other efforts. So before we go on and talk more about the verdict, I want you to maybe reflect on the importance of Zeiger, this verdict, what your thoughts are in observing this trial from where you're at.
Well, first of all, just allow me to thank you for your coverage of the trial. Not many people were talking about it. And not many people were talking about it in the same depth as you were. So I'm very appreciative of that and allowed me to tune in my own way from a distance. I really appreciate it. I think, in terms of what you were saying, like avoiding the language of victory is probably a good thing because we don't know what's about to come. I do think there's some gains that were made. Just the fact that, you know, I'm no legal scholar, but just the fact that there's precedent now for kind of an understanding that a lot of online hateful displays are disingenuous, that those displays try to con people into thinking that they're normal communications, that they're humor, that they're journalism, what have you. I think that's important to point out that's hopefully a precedent that's going to reflect on you know, future trials and future efforts to combat hate speech, whether that's online or in real life. I think, especially as someone who works at a Holocaust education center, just the fact that the facts of the Holocaust were reemphasized in this trial, and it was made clear that they're not up for debate. I think that's a win in and of itself, because a lot of times denialists will kind of rely on the idea of plausible deniability, or even, you know, creating the illusion that there might be, you know, a bunch of coincidences that amount to maybe some of the facts of the Holocaust are, you know, disproven or not quite as solid as they've been presented. So I think that just their reemphasis in this context, or in the context of this trial, is worth its weight in gold. And again, like you were saying, you know, in terms of the victories and how our movements operate, like, you know, court cases, they go one way, they go another. Like we've seen with the trial of Atalante leader Raphaël Lévesque. When in his trial they were showing excerpts from his lyrics with his band Légitime Violence, in which he talks about stabbing leftists, in which he uses slurs. The judge back then said, well, you know, he's putting on a character, he's not being serious. And that kind of judgment allows people who both have a very public career of promoting hate, and another public career in whether that's music, whether that's comedy, it allows them to separate between those two characters, when we know for a fact that hate movements rely on that comedy and they rely on that music as a means of reaching audiences. So I think that it's very much worth pointing out that not all those trials are going to work in a way that's satisfactory towards the objectives of anti-fascists. But regardless, as you said, just the fact that it's the work of anti-fascists that led to Zeiger in this case, but even Raphaël Lévesque, like it was the work of anti-fascists that led to him becoming almost like a publicly reviled figure. Where I remember a few years ago on Quebec Air, you would hear every now and then hosts talking about stunts that groups like Atalante were performing, and analyzing whether or not their slogans like remigration were hateful. And now I would say, like a few years later, that's not really something that you'd hear, because at this point I think most people have clued in that Atalante's a neo-fascist group that has no social acceptability whatsoever. So I think, once again, highlighting the work of anti-fascists is a victory in and of itself in this context.
Yeah, in that spirit, I want to encourage our listeners to check out the exposé of Zeiger, Gabriel Soye-Chaput, that was put together by Montréal Antifascist. This is probably the most comprehensive exposé. So just go to the Montréal Antifascist website, search for Zeiger. It'll come up. And it's an in-depth article all about him. And it was this research that was the basis of, sympathetic anti-fascist minded journalists, I would call them, a mainstream journalist in the English media, at least, who wrote the Gazette article that ended up exposing Zeiger. I'm kind of worried. You mentioned the Raphaël Lévesque case. And in that case, he was acquitted of various charges for a little stunt that he and his fellow travelers pulled off by, giving a parody award to a journalist from Vice magazine they didn't like. He was acquitted of various charges of mischief and other things, illegal assembly and all that. But it was on appeal that he was convicted, and he's currently facing sentencing. His sentence will come down quite soon. But I'm worried that we might have a reverse in the Zeiger case, where on appeal, they might look more critically at the definitive judgment that the judge gave in this case. But I guess that remains to be seen. It remains to be seen whether there'll even be an appeal. Let me maybe give our listeners some background to who we're talking about here. Again, the article that I've just mentioned by Montréal Antifascist, or again, just searching for Zeiger and looking even at the Montreal Gazette article, if you want to have a shorter version of what he's all about, we'll give you the details. But he was active, very active in the neo-Nazi online space and in real life spaces between roughly 2012 and 2018. But the two things I think it's most important to mention that he was involved with was the Daily Stormer that I've already mentioned, which is a neo-Nazi online presence. The main editor of that is a guy by the name of Andrew Anglin. And they sort of epitomize this sort of pretending to be joking around while basically normalizing all kinds of vile hatred towards women, trans folks, the LGBTQ community, blacks, immigrants, Muslims, Jews. It just goes on and on. It's vile. I'm not going to share the details of that vileness, but it's vicious. And in addition to the Daily Stormer, there was another online forum that shut down in 2017, but was active for several years prior to that, which is called the Iron March. And what makes the Iron March so significant, it's something that sort of was downplayed and not really mentioned at all during the trial, is that the Iron March became an online forum where groups like Antawaffen Division, violent groups like them, the Azov Battalion, the Nordic Resistance Movement, Casa Pound, and other groups, National Action in the UK, could get organized. Zeiger actually bragged on a podcast, this is prior to him being arrested, of course, that was one of the great things that the Iron March accomplished. He gave this interview after the Iron March was shut down by its moderator, who was based in either Kazakhstan or Russia at the time. So, you know, a direct association with violent groups involved with real life violent activities, such as, you know, in Sweden, the bombing of a refugee center by the Nordic Resistance Movement, the attack on a dentist of South Asian origin in the UK by a National Action Militant. This was in 2015. A foil conspiracy by people loosely associated with the Adam Waffen Division to try to commit a massacre at a shopping center in Halifax. That was back in 2015. So Zeiger was associated with that. He was associated with the Daily Stormer. I like the way Montreal Antifascist describes him, the Montreal keyboard Nazi who wanted to be Goebbels. Zeiger isn't, you know, the stereotype of a bonehead with tattoos on the street that likes to beat up people. He's an intellectual of the movement, a Machiavellian. He wrote books about how to, you know, promote these ideas. He envisioned a rise of fascism. So, you know, that's the background of this guy. And he sort of began to be exposed because he showed up in Charlottesville in 2017, that famous demonstration, the so-called Unite the Right demonstration, where an anti-racist protester was murdered, Heather Heyer. A small contingent of Montrealers attended. And if we bring ourselves back to this moment in 2017, I'm not sure what you were up to back then, Etienne, because you did mention your trajectory a bit and, you know, how you were monitoring hate. But I do remember that 2016, 2017 period where Trump got elected, Charlottesville would happen in that summer of 2017 as being sort of a height of the so-called alt-right, which was essentially the extreme right and, sort of running cover and camouflage for fascism. But maybe you can situate where you were at and your recollections of that time before I continue to talk a bit more about what Zeiger was up to at that time.
Well, at the time I was an undergrad student. So I was, my interest in the general field of fighting extremism and far-right violence was much less professional at the time. But I do remember, sit around in I think it was early August of 2017 when the rally began and just being like, this is huge. This feels like not quite unprecedented, because we know that these demonstrations have been taking place for some time, but I think there was a real opportunity on their behalf, and to some extent they seized that opportunity. For mainstream appeal, where that was still back then when the alt-right, and I'm referring to the alt-right here as a specific movement that's kind of not exactly gone away but lost prominence, but that was one of the first explicitly like neo-Nazi movements to really make it an active priority of theirs to seek mainstream appeal. And I thought there was a real danger there, as we know, a lot of the figures that are associated with that, I guess, moment in history have been exposed thanks to the work of anti-fascists. They've lost any amount of mainstream appeal that they had back then. But I do think that moment is seminal, regardless of whether or not the alt-right proper is still around today, because the playbook that they wrote, which I use "wrote" because it was, I guess, the most modern version of it. But it's a playbook that they borrowed from people like David Duke and before him, George Lincoln Rockwell, who's the leader of the American Nazi Party in the post-war era. There's still people who are using that playbook today. And in fact, I think they've built on the successes of the alt-right in terms of seeking that mainstream appeal. And now today we've got people like Nick Fuentes, who've had the opportunity of getting in direct contact with politicians, having politicians show up at their events. And now, we've seen as well with Kanye West and his association with Nick Fuentes, like, we've seen, unfortunately, since Charlottesville, the playbook of the so-called optical far right break into unprecedented levels of success. So I think that moment felt very intense at the time and very important at the time, because I think a lot of people knew where this was going to go. And unfortunately, we're still kind of walking in that path and walking in that direction today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope we have time to get into Fuentes a bit later, because, you know, there are figures like Zeiger who've been discredited and is facing potential jail time for whatever that's worth, and has been neutralized a bit. But then you have people like Fuentes who are meeting with Trump and, you know, appearing on podcasts where they have, you know, audiences of hundreds of thousands of people. But, to, you know, to go back to this timeline, yeah, this point in Charlottesville was when the alt-right slash far-right slash fascists were trying to get into what, you know, what they call IRL, in real doing stuff in IRL, in real life. And where this applies to Zeiger is Zeiger showed up with a contingent from Montreal, linked up with his comrade and fascist comrades from the Daily Stormer. And because of the media coverage, particularly one video by Vice, we were able to, you know, see his face and sort of put a face to this name, because his name was mentioned as he was chanting anti-Semitic slogans and what have you. And again, due to the patient, steadfast work of anti-fascists behind the scenes, people will never know. Zeiger was exposed in an article in the Montreal Gazette in 2018, based on and that made a lot more people more aware of what was going on. And based on a complaint of one specific article that Zeiger wrote, an anti-Semitic article, a warrant was issued for his arrest later on in 2018. He would only turn himself in eventually by 2020. So for about 2 years, he was on the run. We learned for the first time, actually quite recently, at an early stage of his sentencing hearing, that his passport was confiscated in the UK. So he doesn't have a passport. So that might mean that perhaps he was picked up on an international warrant. Who knows? But after court dates in 2021, he eventually had his trial and finally the verdict. I've already stressed, you know, one key point, which is, you know, the gain here, insofar as there is a gain for anti-fascism, is the fact that he was exposed, that someone who craved anonymity and through that anonymity was producing hundreds of articles with all kinds of racism and anti-Semitism towards all kinds of identifiable groups. You know, that person was neutralized in many ways. The other thing to stress, though, through this trial is how the case against Zeiger was botched. The example that I give, I've already alluded to it earlier, is that Zeiger took the stand, which was a bit surprising because there was an article he's facing with, you know, I'll read the first line. I don't like repeating the racist stuff. But in so far as we talked about Charlottesville, it's worth mentioning the first line of this article. In the article that he wrote, one of hundreds, by the way, which he got paid approximately $14 for, which we'll get into in a second. He wrote, 2017 will be the year of action. We need to make sure no SJW, social justice warrior, or Jew can remain safely untriggered. Nonstop Nazism everywhere until the very streets are flooded with the tears of enemies. The article goes on to say worse stuff that Zeiger claimed was written by Andrew Anglin, his editor, but which the judge rejected. By the way, this article was written in January of 2017, and when we talk about 2017 being the year of action, and know that in August of that same year, we'd have the Charlottesville demonstration where neo-Nazis and far-right extremists would try to march, and did march openly, and an anti-racist would be murdered, it sort of makes what he says quite auspicious. In any case, as you know, Zeiger's on trial for this article, but he takes the stand, and during his cross-examination, he denies knowing the meaning of 1488. 1488, for people who don't know, and it's totally okay if you don't. a lot of people do this research and go into the rabbit hole of doing online research so other people don't have to expose themselves to this toxic atmosphere. But in any case, the 14 words are 14 words that inspire white supremacists, and 88 refers to the eighth letter of the alphabet, HH, which would mean Heil Hitler. And for Zeiger to deny that, and for the prosecutor to not be able to say that is not true, because they never brought in any evidence saying that the Daily Stormer was neo-Nazi. They didn't bring in any evidence saying that what 1488 would mean. And actually didn't bring any evidence of the hundreds of articles, dozens of podcasts, the books that Zeiger wrote. The video from Vice that would show him chanting anti-Semitic slogans in 2017 in Charlottesville in a completely unironic way. This was a pathetic case. And I guess luckily, the judge still thought he had enough to go on to convict Zeiger. Although one question the judge did ask during the trial, which, again, I attended for every moment except for that minute where I had to step out when Zeiger denied knowing what 1488 meant. The judge asked that one.